Welcome to the 13 Skulls, a journey into a world that is just beyond our comprehension, the world of the paranormal.
Everybody to episode number 17 of the 13 Skulls podcast. Today we're going to take a look at a couple of listener emails. We're going to look at the Montauk Monster, which recently landed on a beach. We're going to take a look at a man who's proud of his 12 fingers and 14 toes. We're also going to look at Emotive's new mind control headset for your computer, a bishop who was attacked by masked little people, and a bunch more than that, so stay tuned with me. We got a lot coming up in the 17th episode of the 13 Skulls podcast.
Turn your tail and run, 'cause I'm angry and I'll mess you up for fun. I'm a child of their moms and rotten European arm, and you are me.
Well, all right. Thanks, everybody, for joining me today. We got a lot to cover, so let's go ahead and jump right into it. Let's get the formality stuff buried in the dirt and out of the way. If you want, I'd really appreciate it if you want to sign the Frapper map. There's a link to all the stuff that I'm going to talk about here on the right, on the left sidebar of the 13skulls.com. If you want, sign the Frapper map. I'd really appreciate it. I'd love to know where people are listening from. If you want, give the show a review on iTunes. I'd really appreciate that. There's already 20-some-odd reviews on there. If you want, go ahead and do that. I'd really appreciate it. Also, if you want, give the show a vote on Podcast Alley if you like it enough. Again, there's links to all that stuff on the left sidebar of the 13skulls.com. The Podomatic feed has now gone basic, so that means that the bandwidth will be very limited. So change over your feed subscription to 13skulls.com to be able to get all the upcoming shows and content. I'll post the feed with all the shows for now, so any of you guys that want to go and change your feed, you'll be able to find it easily. It'll be with all the postings that I put up from now on. Otherwise, the feed subscription button is on the left sidebar of the website. If you want to give the show an email, if you want to, you know, if you feel like typing something out and you want to give the show your opinions, comments, feedback, experiences, anything like that, the email is the13skulls@gmail.com. Or you can call the show at 206-338-2205, or locally here in the DFW area is 817-986-0019. All right, well, the first thing that I wanted to get into today were a couple of listener emails that I had received. The first one is from David. He said, "I've been meaning to send you this story for a while, but after the superstition about a bird in the house, I had to write to you. This is not about a bird in the house, but it is about a bird trying to get into the house, which probably is part of the same thing. This happened 3 times to my mother, my paternal aunt, and my paternal grandmother. Each of them, of course, at different times, was sitting in an upper room of the farmhouse where my grandmother lived. Each of them, at the time it happened to them, again, at different times and years apart, were in the last month of their pregnancy with their first child. As each of them was sitting next to the window, a large black bird started banging itself against the window like it was trying to get in. After several attempts, it flew away. For each of them, 3 days later, they went into labor and their baby was stillborn. As I said, I know this is true because my mother told it to me several times. I am the oldest living child because my brother before me was one of the ones stillborn after the bird came. When my wife was pregnant, if she told me she saw a bird trying to get into the window, we were going straight to the hospital, but it never got that far. Our only son was premature, but healthy, so we never got to the ninth month. As far as I know, neither my sister nor my brother's wife ever saw the bird, and all their children were born healthy. I think it's probably because these things happen in threes. Anyway, thought you might find it interesting. Well, thank you, David. I really appreciate you sending that in, and I thought it was a really weird superstition that if there's a bird in your house, then, you know, how is that bad luck? But obviously, that's kind of strange that it happened to each one of your mother, your aunt, and your grandmother at different times, years apart, and the same thing happened with their first child that was born stillborn. That's just a crazy, crazy thing. I wonder, it really does make me wonder if there's anything to it. But anyway, if anybody else has got anything on, you know, anything like that happening with birds in the house, you know, that type of thing, you know, any bad luck, that type of story, you know, send it in. I'd love to hear it. And thanks again, David. I really do appreciate you sending that story in. The next one that I got is from Scott. He says, "Hi, this is my first time to write to your show, and I think it's great, although the music is a little hard on the ears and brain," which I've heard that from a lot of people. And, you know, I have to say that really the reason I have music like that in there is twofold. The reason is I like that kind of music. And the second thing is that there's not a lot of shows that have that heavy of music in it. A lot of shows have good positive music and you know, music that is kind of typically commercial in my eyes, maybe not so much, but it seems that way to me. You know, I've got a couple of emails about people saying that they just can't stand it. And my apologies if you can't stand the music. That's just kind of music that I like. And it's a little bit different than most of the shows that you'll hear because there's not a lot of music out there that's like that in podcasts from what I've heard. Anyway, his email goes on to say, "Anyway, I thought I'd send two pictures of what I got around the middle of October last year. These were taken behind my house in Granbury, Texas, which is really right just southwest of where I live here in Fort Worth. What I thought I'd do is just try it and see if anything happens. I went outside about 7:30 p.m. and talked to the spirits. I took about 20 shots in random pattern after I asked if they would show themselves to my camera. I did not see anything while I was taking the shots, flash and all, but as I put them on my computer, I had to have my wife come in and take a look at these and tell me I'm not seeing things. There was nothing before the first 8 or 10 shots, then there were these two side by side and nothing after that. I remember where I was standing. These two were about 3 to 4 seconds apart from each other. The first of these two is the rib looking one, and I turned about 35 to 40 degrees to the left the next one, and of course continued to shoot in random fashion for another 8 or so shots. Now I smoke, but I was very careful not to smoke outside while I was doing this photo shoot, as I knew it would mess things up. Anyway, I cannot explain these except for maybe the fact that my wife and I are part Native American and that I asked permission. As to what these are, take it for what you see. I can't explain what it or they are. You may, if you wish, post these pictures. I would like someone to take a look and tell me tell me what they are, are they spirits or what. I still have the memory card with the original photos on it. While I'm writing, I may as well say that I'm very interested in EVP work. And I have many recordings that I've gotten here at my house as well as a place in Fort Worth that I go for my work that I do. Anyway, dude, Scott, if you have any of those EVPs that you'd like to send into the show, I'd love to be able to hear them. Maybe we can get some analysis on it and see what people come up with. But I'll post those pictures for people to take a look at and see, see what they come up with. All right, well, the next thing that I wanted to take a listen to real quick is a call-in that I got from Lily Mama. So let's go ahead and take a listen to that real quick.
Hey, TJ. Lily Mama here. Holy crap, what an episode the last one was. You know, I really enjoyed listening to the other listener, shadow person / ghost experiences, and I was actually compelled to listen to them a couple of times, and I really admire those people for stepping up and sharing. You know, the other listeners had some pretty freaky experiences, too, and I could actually picture them in my head and what was basically going through their minds, I guess, or their mind's eye. Very, very creepy. You know, many of us who've had these quote-unquote things happen worry that people are going to think that we're nuts, but It's comforting to know that there are people like you that are accepting and caring enough to listen, so thank you very, very much, TJ. I'm sure I speak for many when I say thanks for understanding and never judging. I'd also like to thank you for sharing my experiences with your listeners. You know, my stomach dropped and I felt that, you know, like I was going to throw up when I heard myself on your podcast, but then I had to remind myself that it's very therapeutic for me to get out this crap out of my head and out there for people to hear about. So hopefully others will call in or write in either their experience or their opinions of what these things are. You know, and just like you said, I'm not out there to get attention, TJ, and the listeners. I'm not out there to get attention. I get enough of that with my cooking because I'm a chef and teaching, and I would never, ever feel comfortable enough to share these experiences with anyone around me. And I have nothing to gain from it except for getting a better understanding of what these things are and why they tormented me. And I appreciate your opinion about what you were talking about with my three-year-old son when he was 3 years old at the time and why he wanted to hear his Sunday school music. You know, it really made sense. You see, this is why I'm sharing. You and people like you help me to understand these little bits here and there over the years, and I get to put more pieces of the weird puzzle together. You know, you make sense, dude. You really do. And that being said, I'll be happy to share other weird experiences that have happened to me in my lifetime. And trust me, too, there have been a lot. I've recently been reading up on and listening to interviews about Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and she delves into many, many paranormal subjects. And however, I only just heard her talk about shadow people. And according to the data she's collected based on her interviews with some people, she seems to think that shadow people are entities from another realm and have some sort of agenda. And she differs them from shadow, what she calls ghosts, because they don't act the same. She says that shadow people seem to have, how'd she put it, a directed intelligence with a purpose and agenda, and how they're wanting to know something about us or manipulate us in some way. But at the same time, they hide from us. They seem to not want us to know who they are or what they're doing. And then that's why they wear the hats and the coats, the cloaks. The stories that she's collected that basically describe them as being seen during in a bedroom visit, a silhouette of a tall man wearing a hat and a coat, that they're blacker than black, you know, that they block out any light in back of them, that they stand at your bed or in a corner, heebie-jeebies, that they have no facial features, just like in the ones that I saw, but you know that they're staring at you and that they can disappear in a heartbeat and vanish through walls. TJ, when I heard all of this, I got those severe goosebumps. Most of the description were like the same as mine. Real creepy. And she ran down this list, you know, and I could picture the ones that tormented me and got that creeped out feeling instantly. But, you know, TJ, I'll continue to research and listen to the stories for others, you know, for answers. And I'll listen to the stories from other people. I want to know more about it. As for experiences, you know, always feel free to share mine with your listeners. Again, hopefully other listeners will open up and share theirs as well. And, you know, we won't feel so alone. You know, finally, I guess to the sharing part, you know, I promise you that I would share you the other really messed up experience that I had when I was younger. And again, I've talked about this experience just one time this year, and I haven't talked about it before this year for many, many years. You know, I don't really like to talk about it, but when I was about 10, 12 years old, I can always tell that it was a really bad experience because, you know, I get the goosebumps and my eyes well up, and they're just really friggin', they're very vivid. My stepmom and I were sleeping over at my auntie's house in Bridgewater, and it was really hot that night, so I remember the windows being open in the second floor bedroom where I was sleeping in, and I can remember that there was this box-style fan blowing the air right on me, you know, from the window. And I can always remember when I was about to enter the room, I felt a sense of dread and a feeling that kind of like I was being watched, you know, and then thinking that it was just hot and, you know, probably making my mind wander, I turned the light off and tried to get some sleep. And I was super excited about going swimming the next day and the family picnic with all its food and everything. Well, before I knew it, I felt this horrible, dreadful feeling that I was being watched again. And this time, it was really intense. Now, understand that I don't get creeped out by the dark as a kid, because as kids were always in bed early growing up, and lights out meant lights out. And I really had a problem falling right to sleep, but this was different. You know, I had an overwhelming feeling to get up and to turn the light on, and I didn't see anything. So I decided to turn the fan up, and again, that was, I thought I was just overheated, and I thought I was imagining things. When I reached for the knob in the box fan, and I can still see it in my head, this horrific demon face, there's no way to explain the scowl and the growl of this head, just the head. And it had the biggest teeth I've ever seen. And I don't remember the eyes. It had like a gargoyle-type face. And when I went to go turn the fan up, its face was right close to mine. And it was like getting scared and surprised. And it literally scared the piss out of me. You know, I'll never, ever forget how its gnarled mouth went up and its pointed teeth, and it wasn't a figment of my imagination. I remember bolting my butt out of the room and speed of lightning, and I remember taking that whole flight of stairs in two jumps. I never have been so scared in my life. And I was holding on to the railing, shot down the stairs. I flew into Ani's room, and I refused to move. No hell or high water was going to make me move my ass out of her bed. And I told her she could beat me, she could set me on fire. I was not leaving out of that room. And I would not go back up the stairs into that other room. And I wanted out of that house the first thing in the morning. You know, she tried to comfort me and, you know, it's okay, Lily. You know, you were hot. Maybe you saw this, maybe you saw that. No. I know what I saw. And I couldn't fall asleep for the rest of the night. I mean, I know that wasn't my imagination. I saw that freaking thing face to face. I heard the growl. I heard the snarl. I felt it. It's like when I saw that thing face to face, it's like it punched me in my chest. It sucked all the wind out of me. You know, to this day, it really freaks me out. I mean, people just don't understand. People wish that they could have a ghost at their house. They wish that they could see stuff. They wish that they could have an experience. But until you experience those things, You don't want to ever experience those things again. You've already gotten your experience, and unfortunately, it's not a pleasant one. It's not a poke or a prod. It's a scare the living crap out of you, and you wonder if farts have lumps, you know? So, again, thank you, TJ, for being an outlet. I always look forward to answers. I'm glad to get that poison out of me and out of my chest, you know? And if it means that it works me up a little bit and gets me a little freaked out, then so be it. I'd like to hear one of your experiences someday. You know, kind of make me feel like I'm not alone here. Thanks, dude. Always, as always, keep up the great work. And hope to hear the new show soon. I know you're going on vacation. Hope you have a great time. Come back to us and get another show out, dude. Take care. Lila Mama's out.
All right, well, thank you very much, Lily Mama, our darling. I really do appreciate you sending that in. You've been a great listener, and I will always appreciate when you call in.
Are you looking for a new podcast to listen to? One that covers all topics of the entertainment industry? Look no further than Doomcast. Doomcast covers a wide variety of entertainment topics, including video games, movies, television, and even other podcasts. For more information, please visit the official Doomcast website at www.doomcastonline.com.
Next thing that I wanted to talk about real quick is an email that I got from Jeremy. And it's not a listener email so much as it is kind of an article. In the article, I don't necessarily know where it came from, but the title of the article is Apollo 14 Astronaut Claims Aliens Have Made Contact, but it's been covered up for 60 years. The article says, Edgar Mitchell was the lunar module pilot for Apollo 14. Aliens have contacted humans several times, but the government has hidden the truth for 60 years, and the sixth man to walk on the moon has claimed claim that they have. Apollo 14 astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell said he was aware of many UFOs visiting to Earth during his career with NASA, but each one was covered up. Dr. Mitchell, who's now 77, said during a radio interview that sources at the space agency who had had contact with aliens described the beings as little people who looked strange to us. He said supposedly real-life ETs were similar to the traditional image of small-framed large eyes and heads. Chillingly, he claimed our technology is not nearly as sophisticated as theirs, and had they been hostile, he warned, we would be gone by now. Dr. Mitchell, along with the Apollo 14 commander Alan Shepard, holds the record for the longest ever moonwalk at 9 hours and 17 minutes following their 1971 mission. I happen to have been privileged enough to be in on the fact that we've been visited on this planet and the UFO phenomenon is real, said Dr. Mitchell. It's been well covered up by all our governments for the last 60 years or so, but slowly it's leaked out and some of us have been privileged enough to have been briefed on some of it. UFO theorists believe Roswell in New Mexico was the site of an alien crash in 1947. I've been in the military and intelligent circles, who know that beneath the surface of what has been public knowledge, yes, we have been visited. Reading the papers recently has been happening quite a bit. Dr. Mitchell told the astonished Kerrang radio host Nick Margerison, this is really starting to open up. I think we've headed for real disclosure and some serious organizations are moving in on that direction. Officials from NASA, however, were quick to play the comments down. In a statement, a spokesman said for NASA, NASA does not track UFOs. NASA is not involved in any sort of cover-up about alien life on this planet or anywhere in the universe. So basically, he's saying that NASA is covering up the fact that they're not covering up anything. So anyway, I thought it was an interesting article. The next thing that I wanted to talk about real quick is courtesy of Gawker.com, and it's the Montauk Monster. I'm sure a lot of you have heard about the Montauk Monster right now, probably already seen the pictures of it, but it was reported here locally in the DFW news that this thing had been found. And, you know, I've heard a lot about it, that it's some genetic mutation that the government's, working on some weird genetic thing and coming up with these strange monsters. But I've also heard that it's a dog, and I've heard that it's a raccoon. And I can kind of see it being a raccoon. It kind of has that same body shape. But this article says this is an actual monster, some sort of rodent-like creature with a dinosaur beak. A tipster says that there is a government animal testing facility very close by in Long Island. But unless the government is trying to design horrible Montauk monsters that will eat IEDs and fart fire at bad Iraqis, we're not sure why they create such a creature or create such an unthinkable beast. They think it's some kind of viral marketing. I don't know. I just think it was an ugly creature. I mean, for those of you who haven't seen it, it looks about to be the same frame as a dog. Four legs, kind of a rat-like tail. It doesn't have any fur on it. It looks like it's just straight-up skin, like almost leathery in a way, kind of a dark color. Some patches of it are white. You know, and it does have this these kind of pointy little ears and this weird, strange, pointy beak. Now, granted, if it didn't have its snout, if the snout had fallen off of the front of it, then of course it's going to be nothing but the cartilage in the front of the nose to look like a beak. I mean, to me, it kind of could be a dog, could be a really ugly raccoon that, you know, since it's waterlogged, it lost all of its fur. I don't know. I just thought it was really, really interesting. I'll post a link to it so you guys can go take a look at it for those of you who haven't seen it yet. It's really interesting. It's an ugly little creature. If you got any opinions on the Montauk Monster or any more information on it, shoot it to me. I'd love to hear about it. All right, well, the next thing that I wanted to talk about is courtesy of paranormal.about.com, and it's kind of a personal experience called Laughter from Hell, and it's just a personal experience. I wanted to read it real quick because I thought it was interesting. It says, I'm a senior at Texas A&M University. I have no health or mental problems. I like sports, pizza, hanging out with friends, and watching movies. I believe in God. I think I'm pretty normal. I don't want any recognition or sympathy for the following story. I have nothing to gain by telling it to you, and many of you will probably think I must be at least a little bit crazy, but I assure you I'm not, and I swear to you that this story is true. I remember the day clearly. It was a bright and early summer morning, and I was home alone, sleeping in my bedroom. I heard some laughter, and it woke me up. Our door was never locked, so I thought my buddies, you know, had come into my bedroom and were laughing. I was slowly getting up when I noticed the laughter was becoming increasingly louder. For some reason, I lay there for a second, contemplating the now screaming laughter, and I got scared. I rolled over to see the source of this laughter. The first split second that I saw it, I thought it was my friend Brad wearing his furry gorilla costume that he used for Halloween. It was a great joke, and I thought, and I half smiled, but then I made eye contact with it. He looked like he had come straight out of hell. Everything except for his face was covered in 3-inch long black fur. His face was human, and he had Caucasian skin. He was probably about 6 feet tall. If it was not for his sinister demeanor and fur, he could have passed for a European. He was squatting down like a baseball catcher, and his shoulders were hunched over like he had carried a heavy weight on them for centuries, or perhaps he just had a very low self-esteem. He looked cursed, like he would never find comfort, and he seemed very angry because of it. He had huge muscles like a heavyweight bodybuilder, and the thick fur made him look animalistic. He was smiling a debaucher's smile, and his human eyes were so full of evil that I wanted to look away. While making eye contact, he leaned in closer to me and opened his eyes a little wider as if to communicate, "Yep, I'm real. Then this is not a costume, and you are not dreaming." His satisfied smile told me he enjoyed his communication. All this time I was frozen in fear. All of the hair on my body was sticking up, and I had goosebumps from head to toe. I was amazed at what I was seeing. A million thoughts were running through my mind, like, oh my god, demons are real, and is he going to kill me? There really is an invisible supernatural world, and God must be real. His body language indicated he wanted to hurt me, and his screaming laughter, which was now mocking me, was becoming unbearable. Out of sheer desperation, I said, "God help me." But as soon as the sound of the letter G left my mouth, the demon disappeared. I guess the name of God is powerful, and I never saw it again. Well, I thought that was interesting. I just had to include that into the show. I thought it was really crazy that you had something like that happen. Anyway, if anybody else knows anything about something like that or have had an experience close to that, you know, let me know. I'd love to hear it. Now, the next thing that I wanted to talk about is courtesy of MSM.com, and it's NASA confirms water on Mars. And I'm sure most of you have heard about this by now, but I wanted to just talk about it real quick because I thought it was really interesting that they had actually found water ice on Mars. It says the Phoenix spacecraft has tasted Martian water for the first time. By melting icy soil in one of its lab instruments, the robot confirmed the presence of frozen water looking below the Martian permafrost. Until now, evidence of ice on Mars's northern pole region has been largely circumstantial. It was really interesting that they actually found it there. So if water is on Earth and water is on Mars, really in my mind, what would keep water from being anywhere else in the universe? It says the ice confirmation earlier this week was accidental. After two failed attempts to deliver ice-rich soil to one of Phoenix's 8 lab ovens, researchers decided to collect pure soil instead. And surprisingly, the sample was mixed with a little bit of ice. Researchers were able to prove the soil had ice in it because it melted in the oven at 32 degrees Fahrenheit or 0 Celsius, which is the melting point of ice, and released water molecules. Plans call for baking the soil at even higher temperatures next week to sniff for carbon-based compounds. Says the latest scientific finding is the first piece of good news for a mission that has been dogged by difficulties in recent weeks. An electrical short in one of the Phoenix test ovens. It's had all kinds of really, you know, just a lot of issues. It says NASA said Phoenix has achieved minimum success thus far. And the space agency on Thursday announced that it would extend the mission for an extra 2 months until the end of September. Unlike the twin rover missions near the Martian equator, Phoenix's lifetime cannot be extended much more, because it won't have enough power to survive the Martian winter. The science team also released a color panorama of Phoenix's landing site using more than 400 images taken by Phoenix. The view was painstakingly stitched together by Mark Lemon at Texas A&M University, and the portrait revealed a Martian surface that was coated with dust and dotted with rocks, which I think we all by now know that they have dust storms and that they have a lot of rocks. Now that Andy just find that, you know, there's some kind of organic material that's alive there on that planet, now that we've figured out that there's water. So even if there's water there, that'll be good for the people that we send there if they ever actually do go. All All right, well, the next thing I wanted to talk about is courtesy of azcentral.com. It's a lake on Saturn's moon is the first found off of Earth. A spacecraft orbiting Saturn has detected a lake roughly the size of Lake Ontario in one of the planet's moons. The finding, confirmed by a University of Arizona-led science team, is the first time a lake has been discovered on another body in our solar system. You wouldn't want to swim in this lake, though. For one thing, it's made of liquid ethane, which on Earth is found in natural gas and is used as fuel. For another, the temperature on the moon named Titan hovers around 300 degrees below zero. If you took a dip, you'd be frozen solid, said UA Professor Robert H. Brown, who is leading the research. Unlike discoveries on other planets of what would appear to be dry lake beds, this is unique because it contains liquid. Liquid lakes, which exist only in a small range of temperatures and pressures, are believed to be rare beyond Earth, says details of the discovery are being published in today's scientific journal, Nature. And there's a couple of little pictures there that you can see. It almost looks like a footprint, the way that the lake is shaped. And the caption below the picture says, a spacecraft captured these photos of a lake on Saturn's moon, Titan. Scientists say that the lake is made of ethane, a hydrocarbon that's found on Earth. Photo shows the lake to the left, and the photo on the right is a partial view. So anyway, you guys go take a look at it. I'll post a link up to it so you can go take a look, see what those photos look like. And, you know, if anybody's got an opinion on it, or you want to, you know, let me know what you think. Shoot me an email, call the show, and let me know what you think about it.
Hey, this is the Paranormal Cafe out of Westchester, Pennsylvania. You can listen to us at paranormalcafe.podomatic.com. And you are listening to the 13 Skulls podcast at the13skulls.com.
All right, you guys, the next article that I wanted to talk about is courtesy of mailonsunday.co.uk, and it's the single hair that could finally prove that the Yeti really exists. Says scientists have used microscopes to analyze strands of hair found that were caught on some rocks in a jungle near the India-Bangladesh border. The tests show that the thick, wiry hairs do not belong to any of the most common wild animals known to live in the area. Instead, they bear a startling resemblance to some hair collected half a century ago by Everest conqueror Sir Edmund Hillary. Researcher Ian Redmond said the hairs are the most positive evidence yet that a Yeti might possibly exist. It might be that the region this animal is inhabiting is remote enough for it to remain undiscovered so far, and we are very excited. Says the 54-year-old primate expert said that he and his Oxford Brookes University colleagues had ruled out the possibility of the hairs coming from animals known to roam the area, including black bears, monkeys, dogs, and wild boar. The hairs are complete with a cuticle in between 3.3 centimeters and 4.4 centimeters, which is 1.3 inches to 1.7 inches. They're long and thick and wiry and curved. We haven't found a match with the most likely contenders, he said, but there is a resemblance with the hairs brought back by Sir Edmund Hillary. There is the exciting prospect that these could turn out to be something very dramatic. DNA tests could help solve the Yeti mystery, and Mr. Redmond said even if DNA tests cannot identify the creature, it should be able to work out what it's related to. It could easily be an unknown primate, even if it's not a Yeti. However, he admitted that the excitement at a potential scientific breakthrough was tinged with fear. My concern was that if we do find something unusual, it would be from a very small population of animals, and I would want to talk to the state government and Indian government so that they are not inundated with people trying to catch one for a museum. The first authoritative description of the Yeti was made in 1889 by British explorer Major L.A. Waddell. Describing his experience, he wrote, "Some large footprints in the snow were alleged to be the trail of a hairy wild man believed to live among the eternal snows." In 1921, a Royal Geographical Society Everest expedition found footprints made by a wild man of the snows at 21,000 feet and led to the creature being dubbed the Abominable Snowman. Since then, the Yeti has eluded detection despite numerous attempts to find it. Perhaps the most thorough of all was the Daily Mail expedition of 1954. A team of scientists and mountaineers, supported by 200 Sherpas, scoured the Himalayas for months. They failed to spot a Yeti, but unidentifiable footprints were noted. And I thought it was really interesting. I mean, they show a pretty odd-looking pictures that they got here. I mean, they do show footprints in the snow. Very odd, strange footprints. It says the mysterious 1951 Shipton print photograph that appears to show the footprints of an abominable snowman. And they're weird footprints. They really are. They're really wide. I don't know. You guys are going to have to go take a look at it. I'll provide a link to it so you guys can. And if you got any information on the Yeti, or if you think he really exists or doesn't, let me know what you think. This next article is courtesy of NiagaraGazette.com, and it's a woman still seeing apparitions of Virgin Mary. It says 2 years have passed since Antonina Filippertis first heard what she believes is the voice of the Virgin Mary. The 84-year-old was walking in her driveway on August 29, 2006, when she heard instructions to look at the front of her house at 96 Harvey Avenue. I heard a voice that said, "Look in your tree." I turned around, but there was nobody there. When she looked in her tree, an old maple that stands near the curb in the front of her house, she saw images of the Virgin Mary in three different places embedded in the knot holes of the tree. Her life has dramatically changed since then. She says she has experienced several apparitions of the Virgin Mary, including one where she was so beautiful she came to me and said, "You don't have to use the walker anymore." Filippertis also claims a miraculous healing has occurred. "I was in a nursing home and my children would have to walk me and dress me. Now she is back on her feet, as a mobile woman of her age might be expected to be. She continues to pray the rosary at least twice a day." A neighbor who responded to Filippertis' call for help when she first saw the apparitions was reluctant to call the event a miracle when they were questioned. Filippertis' family continues to believe that their mother is connecting with the divine, as do people who apparently continue to hang rosaries and other religious items on the tree. I thought it was really neat. She says she continues to hear the Virgin Mary, including a message from that Filippertis' church, St. Mary in Lockport, will not be closed despite plans by the Catholic Diocese of Buffalo to close it. So anyway, I thought it was really neat. There's a video there. You can actually see the woman. She's talking about her experiences. Like I said, I'll post a link to it. You guys can go watch the video and let me know what you think. You got me floating. You'll never let me down. The amazing thing, you turn on naturally. I can kiss you whenever at ease. You got me floating around and round. You got me floating never down. You got me floating naturally. Floating across and through, you make me float right on up to you. There's only one thing I need to really get me there, and that's to hear you laugh without a care. You got me floating round and round. This next article I thought was weird. It's courtesy of LodiNews.com, LodiNews.com. And they're saying that members of a mosque say that leaves are a sign from God. And you can go take a look at these leaves. It's quite strange. I'll kind of make my way through it really quick. It says, two leaves that sprouted from a squash plant of a member of the Lodi Mosque are thought to by many in the local Muslim community to have a miraculous message. The message is one of three local miracles the Muslim community acknowledges as a way God contacted the people of Lodi, or Lodi, I'm not sure how you say that. Months ago, Lodi resident Mohammed Safdar, 51, planted a squash plant before leaving for Mecca on a pilgrimage in early July. While in Mecca, Safdar, healthy at departure, quickly grew ill and died about a day and a half after arriving. 2 weeks ago, just days after Safdar's death, the squash plant had two leaves with tiny rough veins tracing through them. It is through those lines, which look like ancient Arabic, the mosque's imam, Ahmed Hashimi, says Allah's message is told to the people of Lodi. Hashimi said that on the left-hand side of one of the leaves, the name Muhammad appears twice. On the other leaf, the word Allah is seen in the upper right-hand corner. Hashimi said Muslim people need to see the message and remember to come closer to God. Malik Ahmad, a Lodi resident and member of the mosque, said that the leaves are especially significant because the plants they came from were planted by a man who went on his pilgrimage and died in Mecca. Muslims believe that those who die on pilgrimage go straight to heaven, and Ahmad said the squash leaves confirm that belief. Now, I want you guys, there's a little bit more to this article there. There's a few different things that they're going to talk about in there, but they actually do show photographs of the leaves, and it's one of the leaves they show a picture of said that it points out what he believes is an ancient writing for the word Allah on a squash leaf. So anyway, you guys go take a look at it. If you got any opinions on it, let me know. I think it is interesting, but is it just people's belief getting in the way? They're seeing something that's not really there. But anyway, you guys go, you know, actually, you know what? I don't even know if it's something that is common in squash leaves or not, but you know how people see faces and things that really have no face. Anyway, you guys go take a look at it and let me know what you think. All right, well, this next thing that I wanted to talk about is courtesy of telegraph.co.uk, and it's a man who's proud of his 12 fingers and 14 toes. He's holding the record for the most recorded number of fingers and toes in a living person, and it's interesting. It says, pianists, typists, and tailors might have looked green with envy as Haram Ashok Kumthakar of Goa in India has 6 digits on each hand and 7 digits on each foot. But for him, it means that he cannot even wear a pair of simple flip-flops, nor can he find a pair of gloves that fit his hands in the wintertime. Even more frustrating is the fact that Haram does not even hold the official Guinness World Record for most digits on a person because some of his fingers are technically attached even though they are separated by bones. The official Guinness honor belongs to his fellow countryman Devendra Harn, a 13-year-old boy from Calcutta who has 12 fingers and 13 toes on his feet. However, there is some consolation for Haram as he is included in the Indian equivalent of the Guinness Book of Records, the Limca Book of Records. Anyway, there's quite a bit more there. It goes on to talk about him a little bit more. It does show a picture of his hands. He's sitting there with a smile on his face, just holding his hands up. He just has little fingers next to his pinkies. It's quite strange. Anyway, you guys go take a look at it. Like I said, there's more to the article there. I'm just trying to work my way through these really quick because there's a lot of stuff to cover. So you guys go take a look at it and let me know what you think. All right, well, the next thing that I wanted to talk about is courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com. It's a video that says, the title of it is Daytime Poltergeist Activity, Including Dogs' Reactions. And it's a short little article. Let me read it real quick. It says, very interesting video of a supposed poltergeist activity in a home. I've examined the video for several days before I posted and really can't offer much of an explanation other than that it is true paranormal activity. The dog's reactions are exactly as I would expect if an entity were present. I've watched the video, and it is an interesting video. It's different. I have to say, it's something that I'm not sure how to take it. Now, I want you guys to go take a look at this video and watch it again. I'll post a link up to it so you guys can find it easily. I want you guys to go and take a look at it. And basically the video is this. You'll see this, it looks like a little living room, maybe, you know, a couch, a little table, an entryway to another room. Next to that's a door that leads into like a closet or something. You see one of those wire dog cages, dog crate, you know, things people put their dogs in so they don't pee on the floor when they're gone, that type of thing. You'll see two dogs, kind of a, you know, both of them probably around 40 to 50 pounds. One's dark, one's light. and they kind of, you'll see the dogs go out of frame, and then the little, the door that goes into the closet in the back, straight on into the picture, slams shut real quick. Now, it's not open, it's just barely open, like, you know, it's shut, but it's not latched. And it slams shut, and then it, you can hear the door jiggling, like somebody's trying to open the handle, you know, like you can hear the handle jiggling, and then it opens up, and then it slams shut again, and then the dogs are acting funny, and they go out of frame, and there's a roll of paper towel sitting on the table, and all of a sudden it just goes flying over onto the couch, and then the dogs come back, and they're acting as if something's there, and you can hear footsteps, you can see all kinds of stuff, and I'm actually kind of getting chills, like goosebumps right now, thinking about it. It was interesting. But anyway, you guys go take a look at it. If anybody knows, you know, anything about the video as far as it being true or not, let me know. I have heard through different places that you know, I mean, that it is fake. There is one anonymous person that posted a link that says, while I think these videos that the person put up are interesting, they're fakes. You know, that you have to look at the guy's profile and watch all three again. It says, another person said, my dogs also look at me when I'm standing behind the camera waving food and back and forth of them in the air. And it says, another one says, look, my husband quickly saw this and assumed as you folks did, but I watched it several times when I could find it. It would disappear from the blog off and on, and that it and that the paper towel roll flipping backwards, plus the fear shown by the white dog, are not consistent with the owners making a movie. I didn't see any profile. Where is that? She didn't know, obviously. I couldn't find his profile either. Anyway, you guys go take a look at it. Let me know what you think of the video, and you know, I'll be here waiting for your response. All right, but the next thing I wanted to talk about is courtesy of hecklerspray.com, and it's the ghost of the hanging judge. And it says, George Jeffreys was born in 1665. He went on to eventually become a judge with a penchant for ordering hangings, hence his name, the hanging judge. Needless to say, if you had a day in court, you just hope it wasn't him sitting under the presiding powder wig. You probably want to see him even less now, as he's said to be a ghost seen walking about England carrying a fistful of bloody bone. At one point, George Jeffreys was a simple judge who liked to see people swing if he thought they looked at all guilty of various things. He seemed to enjoy his job, as he personally attended many of the hangings. Rope-related executions weren't only his only vice, though. Once he condemned a 70-year-old woman to be burned at the stake. The sentence wasn't exactly carried out. She ended up getting beheaded instead. Some now say that she's a headless specter. If so, she's in good company. Supposedly, Jeffreys is a ghost now, too. It says, interesting to note that most of the people Jeffreys was hanging were rebels from the Battle of Sedgemoor. In the end, he hid in some tower to avoid being hanged himself, but he eventually died there. His ghost has been used as a villain in more than one work of fiction. Christopher Lee even played a Jeffreys-inspired character in a 1970 film called The Bloody Judge. I just thought it was interesting that that there's a judge walking around that, you know, I mean, he used to hang people for all kinds of weird stuff. Anyway, I thought it was interesting. There's a little bit more to the article there. You guys go take a look at it and let me know what you think.
By Phil Rossi, featuring all new Crescent vignettes as well as other stories. Visit www.crescentstation.net for details. In 2007, he scared you. In 2008, Phil Rossi will drive you insane.
Now, this next thing that I want to talk about is courtesy of businessweek.com, and it's a mind control headset for your PC. It says, what if you could simply think about an action and the computer would respond? It says, more and more these days, we rely on computers for play as well as work. Once in a great while, there's an interface that changes how we interact with these machines. The touchscreen on Apple's iPhone, the motion-sensing controller of the Nintendo Wii. But for the most part, we still rely on keyboards, mice, and joysticks. It says, here's how it works. If you think about lifting a heavy object, neurons in your brain fire a particular pattern. Push the door, and it's a different pattern. And the headset can tell the difference. Since no two individuals generate exactly the same pattern, Emotive bundles the headset with a fantasy game that includes practice exercises to tune the device to each user's unique thought processes. After that, you can raise a boulder by thinking lift, or bend a tree by thinking pull. Some neurologists question whether most users have the mental agility to complete the training. Emotive says anyone can master it. It says, to pull this off, Emotive uses electroencephalography, or EEG, electroencephalography. Wow, that's a heck of a word. Anyway, the technology is just what you'd find in many hospitals, but while doctors typically apply gel to a patient's scalp and then attach the sensors that read the brain's faint electrical signals, the EPOC Neuro headset has 16 sensors embedded in its crossbars that communicate wirelessly with your PC. There are no messy smears or tangled wires, but in order to get correct readings, the sensors must have just the right contact with your scalp, which can take a fair amount of fiddling. And once the headset is in place, you have to be careful not to move around too much, for the sensors will slip, preventing the computer from getting a clear signal. Anyway, there's quite a bit more to this article. There's a picture of it there. You can see it's kind of this thing that attaches, like, looks like it's just above your head. Kind of looks like the those big headphones that you got, kind of like that bar that goes across the top of your head to keep it on there, you know. But instead of the things going over your ears, there's all these little fingers that stick out and touching different parts of your head. It's really neat. You guys go take a look at it and let me know what you think. Now, the next thing I wanted to talk about is courtesy of naturalplane.blogspot.com again, and it's a bishop who was attacked by masked little people. And I just thought it was interesting. I'm going to read through this article real quick. It says, for more than a year, speculation, rumors, and mystery have surrounded the former leader of the Gallup Catholic Diocese in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Last July, Bishop Donald Pelote sustained multiple injuries in his home. He said he fell down a flight of stairs, but a mysterious 911 call from Pelote is casting doubt on his claim, and so are his injuries. It says, a Gallup police officer called to the hospital took pictures of the battered and bruised bishop. The pictures have recently been publicly released. Reporters of the station, TV station KOAT, asked Dr. Thomas Bennett, an associate state medical examiner and forensic pathologist from Montana, if Bishop's injuries could have been caused by a fall down the stairs. Sure they are. In fact, he's got impacts on the cheeks, on the bridge of his nose, and on over his shoulders, and the back of his hands and knuckles, even down around his knees and his shins. He said the injuries are more consistent with someone who stumbled and fell several times, but still cannot rule out the bishop being beaten by someone else. His questions come from the bruises on Bishop's knuckles on both hands. Then it said that Bishop may have been using his hands to defend himself. Adding more mystery to the injuries was a bizarre 911 call. A dispatch log from September details Gallup police were called to the bishop's home after he told operators gentle little people about 3 to 4 feet tall wearing Halloween masks were in his home. The dispatcher asked, can you tell me what happened? They're just moving. They've been quiet. They've been going upstairs in the bedroom and hiding behind the artifacts. But they don't talk, said Pelote, adding that they were wearing masks. The dispatcher asked, what kind of mask do they have? Pelote said, ma'am, I don't have time to tell you. You'll have to see it for yourself. Please send somebody over here. He then told the dispatcher that the little people were gentle, but that he was going to hide in his bedroom. In April, Pope Benedict accepted the bishop's resignation, and the bishop has been living in Florida. Kind of makes you wonder, okay, first of all, who is he being attacked by? Little people? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he was on something. I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine, but Maybe he was seeing little demons. Maybe, you know, a group of little people came into his house and decided to beat him up. I don't know. I just thought it was kind of a funny story, kind of an odd story. But anyway, if anybody knows anything else about it, let me know.
Eerie Radio, opening the door to the unknown. Download episodes of Eerie Radio directly from iTunes or visit their website at www.eerieradio.com.
Now, the next thing I want to talk about is courtesy of Siam.com. And it's a new type of synesthesia discovered. And now, let me read this. It's not going to take too long to get through. It says, in the particular neurological condition known as synesthesia, a person's senses meld together so that a synesthete might hear colors or taste shapes. Now scientists have stumbled on a previously unknown form of synesthesia in which visual flashes or movements trigger perceptions of sound. California Institute of Technology neuroscientists Melissa Sains and Christoph Koch confirmed the existence of hearing motion synesthesia, as they dubbed it, by creating a task at which the synesthetes, who are the people who are able to do this, would have an advantage. The researchers presented 4 self-professed synesthetes and 10 non-synesthetes with 100 pairs of Morse code. Like rhythmic sequences, each composed of their auditory beeps or flashes of a white on black background, the participants judged whether the 2 sequences in each pair were the same or different. Both groups judged auditory patterns accurately about 85% of the time. The researchers report in the August 5th issue of Current Biology that on visual trials, non-synesthetes judgments fell to nearly chance levels, a result that corroborates other research showing that most people are better at judging auditory patterns than assessing visual patterns. In contrast, synesthetes who reported hearing sounds such as beeps or taps at the time of the visual signals, distinguished matching from non-matching rhythms 75% of the time. I think of these people as having an enhanced soundtrack in life, Sains said. Her team is conducting brain imaging studies to try and tease out the roots of the soundtrack, as well as how a typical brain combines visual and auditory signals to improve perception. I just thought it was really interesting that you could hear things that you see. I don't know, it was really, here, a visual thing, I thought it was really neat. I mean, I'd heard a little bit about this before, that people could hear colors or taste shapes, which I'd like to know how you could taste a square or hear the color fuchsia. I don't know, I thought it was really interesting. I think it's neat. I'm not poking fun at anybody, but I think it's neat. It's an interesting thing. I just can't comprehend it really or understand it because I can't do it. But anyway, if anybody knows anything else about it, let me know. Now, the next thing that I wanted to talk about real quick is courtesy of collegeotr.com, and it's the top 10 most haunted spots, which is the Long Island edition. Now, I'm going to run through these real quick. Number 10 is Lake Ronkonkoma. Some say it's bottomless. Another legend say that there is a disgruntled ghost of a Native American girl whose lover from a feuding tribe was murdered. Apparently, she drowned herself and returns to haunt the lake. Number 9 is Comac Multiplex Cinemas, just your basic opening and closing of lockers and unexplained noises. Number 8 is Country House Restaurant. This restaurant, converted from an old house, is supposedly haunted by a ghost of a British girl who was hanged during the Revolutionary War. Number 7 is Sweet Hollow Road or Mount Misery. The place is a notorious road in Huntington. There are a few legends behind this one. One says if you park your car under the Northern State Parkway overpass, turn off your lights and put it in neutral, the car will move uphill. Also, a lady in white is said to be seen crossing the street by the graveyard. Another person said that their roommate swears she saw her body. She never even knew about the legend. Before she saw her body, she didn't know about the legend. Somebody else says here that I myself have never experienced any such sighting. And some more outrageous claims include a cop who pulls people over on the road, but when he turns around, the back of his head is missing. Another describes a dog with red eyes, and if you see him, you're going to die. Number 6 is the Hanging Tree. This one is reported by somebody that says, I also visited this spot recently. The legend behind this is the tree in South Patchogue, Patchogue, anyway, says that it used to be to hang people during the Salem witch age. He says that my roommate and I went out one night and heard some unexplainable footsteps and noises. Maybe it was just paranoia. It was dark and we were alone. After all, it was actually terrifying. Number five is the Amityville Horror House. Though infamous and pretty much everybody has heard the story behind this, it's not really that creepy, but it's, I don't know if it's legitimately haunted or not, just an exploited tragedy and a bad movie. Number four is King Park's Asylum, a rite of passage among Long Island kiddies. Exploring the grounds of this abandoned asylum is as creepy as it sounds. Though cops patrol this area and it's illegal to be on the premises, if you choose to visit this area, be discreet. Number three is the Fire Island Lighthouse. Supposedly a caretaker killed himself like 100 years ago and haunts the lighthouse. Reed's Ice Cream Factory. This was knocked down, but there are two stories behind this. The first is a ghost of a murdered woman in the 1920s, another of a little boy who wandered there in the 1940s and died. And number one is Katie's of Smithtown. Just a bar in Smithtown where strange things happen, glasses break, and a ghost named Charlie hangs out. Now, I wish they had more details on this stuff, but obviously, it's College on the Record, collegeotr.com. I thought it was really neat. Guys, I'll post them. There's no real links or anything like that, but they do show pictures. So you guys, go take a look at the pictures and let me know what you think. I think the pictures are pretty neat. This next thing that I'm going to talk about, you'll see pictures of. It's a spooky sighting at Waterways Museum, and it is a weird picture. Basically, the picture. Well, let me read the article real quick. It says staff at the National Waterways Museum at Gloucester Docks believe recent refurbished work has disturbed a ghost. Now, their proof, in the bottom right hand of the corner of the photo, you can make out just a ghostly arm draped across the display. A closer examination revealed more shaded areas and what could be a whole body. The photo was taken by a 13-year-old museum visitor, Abigail Williams, whose family only released the photos of what she captured when they got home and downloaded them to the computer. Her father, Mark, said, "We just kept staring at it and couldn't believe it." Chris Hayes, general manager of the museum, said, "We were amazed when we saw the photo. In the past, visitors have told us about seeing a man dressed in black, and museum staff have heard footsteps when the museum has been empty. Our curator has also heard her voice, even though she was the only person in the building at the time. But this is the first of the evidence of an actual ghost." The museum has called upon the expertise of Lynn Cinderay, a member of the Myers Paranormal Society who runs ghost walks around the docks in the city. She said, "I am really intrigued by the photograph, and when I visited the museum, I discounted a number of possible explanations such as patterns in the wood, and while I didn't manage to capture the arm in my photographs, I did record lots of orbs around the barrels." Now, I'll get to the photographs in a second. It says the museum is housed in an original dockside building, Lanthony Warehouse. The warehouse was built in 1873 and was originally used by Waite James and Company, corn and building merchants. Now, the pictures that you're going to see, it kind of looks like, the building that it's in, the structure that it's in is obviously made completely out of wood. And you'll see a sign that says local trade, a bunch of like 50-gallon drum, old school wooden barrels kind of stacked around. Down in a pyramid shape, and in the bottom right side of the photograph, you'll actually see what is an arm hanging down into the photograph, like a limp arm hanging there. It's really kind of a creepy picture. I'll post them up so you guys can go take a look at it. Anybody knows anything about it, let me know. I thought they were kind of a creepy picture, because the rest of the photograph, there's nobody in the picture. There's nothing there. I mean, it could have easily been faked, but at the same time, if you look at an arm, it looks like there's kind of a misty line that goes off to the left from the arm. But anyway, you guys go take a look at it and let me know what you think. All right, well, the last thing that I wanted to cover for the day was something that's courtesy of WSPA.com, and it's a haunted high school. Some say camera captured ghost at Asheville High School. Now, the article is real short. I'm just going to go ahead and read this real quick. It says that Asheville is abuzz after video was captured by a motion-activated camera at Asheville High School at 2:51 a.m. on Friday, August 1st. In the video, a dark image, some say looks like the silhouette of a child, appears by an elevator. The image advances forward and is again captured in the hallway. It's something, so far, the Asheville School District says it can't explain. Charles Glasner, executive director of public relations for the district, says, "I'm a logical person and I wanted to be able to explain to these folks or anybody, this is what I think it is. It's a bat flying around here and it casts a shadow, but then why is the shadow down here from a different angle? And it's not the shape of a bat. It's that shadow cast on the floor that has even the skeptics perplexed." Now, you're going to watch the video. There's a little bit more to the article here. It says, Sarah Harrison of the Asheville Paranormal Society says, "Well, I've watched the video and I can't debunk it. The fact is that it set off the motion detectors means something physical was there. The shape morphed into something that was human shaped. I have seen many a video surveillance footage of alleged ghosts, and this is the only one that I cannot debunk. Many videos of ghosts are hoaxes, but I think this would be impossible to hoax." Teacher Martha Geithner has her own theory. "It's a ghost. Of course it's a ghost. It's the ghost of some former student who is really angry with the teachers and has come back to get back with the teacher, and he's just making himself known at the time." A school custodian told News Channel 7's Connie LeGrand it's not the first time he's seen an image like this, but he says that's what you can expect from a building built in 1929. Now, you're going to watch the video. In the video, they have some people that they're interviewing talking about the video, and they actually do a little bit of analysis of the video, and it looks like someone's shadow, like a shadow you would see of somebody just standing in a doorway. You know, you got the rectangular light coming in the shape of the doorway with the silhouette standing there. It's not quite that defined, but you can see it like that, and you can see it moving around. It's really, really wild. I thought it was a good video. It is kind of hard to debunk, but anyway, if anybody knows anything about it being real or if it being fake, either way, you know, shoot me an email, give me a phone call, let me know what you think. Anyway, you guys, I'm going to have to wrap the show up now. I do appreciate all the support that everybody's been given. I love the fact that there's so many people listening to the show and that you guys truly enjoy it. There is one thing that I wanted to mention real quick. There was a phone call that I received to my 817 phone line that was from a guy. He left a couple of different phone calls because I think he got cut short. But if you are listening, I didn't catch your name. I didn't catch 95% of what you said. For some reason, it was cutting in and out and in and out all the time. I could make out maybe 2 out of every 10 words of what you were saying. If you know who you are, it was a man called in. You left some phone numbers at the end of the phone call. At least I caught a couple of numbers. Maybe they were, I don't even know what they were. I thought they were phone numbers. But anyway, if you know who you are, if you know who I'm talking about, please call back and leave that message again. I did not get all of your message. It was just a short little bit. I'd say I maybe got a total of 10 seconds of real comprehensible words there. And I don't know if it was my phone line messing up or if it was your phone line messing up or what it was. But if you know who you are, please call in. I really want your message. I didn't get it because it was cutting in and out. So please try and call back and leave that message again. If you like the music in tonight's show, it's courtesy of the IOTA PromoNet at www.iotaalliance.com. There are plenty of links there to download all of the music from tonight's show and every previous episode. And if you like, there's links there to be able to buy them as well. And the music that you're listening to right now, right this very second, is courtesy of Lead Devil. You can find them at myspace.com/leaddevil. That's LEDDEVIL. And I really appreciate those guys sharing their music with me. Like I said, that music is extremely difficult to play. It's really hard. You have to have a certain kind of talent to be able to play it. But I know it's heavy for some people. I know it's hard on the ears sometimes, you guys. But, you know, you don't have to listen to it if you don't want to. Just fast forward through it. But please support the independent music. I love the stuff. It's the best music that's out there. It's non-commercialized, and people do it because they love the the music. So anyway, you guys go visit iodealliance.com for the music that you see the links to, or you can go visit myspace.com/leaddevil for the song that you're listening to right now. One more thing that I wanted to say real quick is that I should be getting some more buttons, some more of the 13 Skulls logo buttons. I will let you guys know as soon as I get them. There are a few people that I've already promised them out to, but if I have any extras, I'll let you guys know. If you want to, please sign up for Apple Map. I'd greatly appreciate it because I love to know where people are listening from. If you really, really love the show and you really want to support it in any way you possibly can, go to iTunes and give us a review, or go to Podcast Alley and give us a vote. There are links on the left sidebar of the 13skulls.com to be able to find that stuff. If you want to shoot the show an email, write out your comments, feedback, whatever experiences that you have, the email is the13skulls@gmail.com, or you can give us a phone call at 206-338-2205, or locally here in the DFW area is 817-986-0019. So anyway, I guess this is the end of episode number 17. I hope you guys are enjoying the show, and I hope you have a great night, day, week, weekend, whatever it is that you're listening to the show. And as usual, I will talk to you guys again on another day.